If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or in Clomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or in Clomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or in Clomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams winter sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Gideon, how's it going this week?
It's going good, man. Went to the DMV today.
Excellent.
Got my license renewed, so I got the fancy paper one right now. Had a long day at work, but got a lot done. And just finished up some errands. And yeah, just ready to get into some gaming this week. Or weekend, awesome. I should say. And I'm getting close to the end of Elden Ring. And mm-hmm. Gonna watch a movie with my buddy over the weekend, so I'm mm-hmm. excited.
That sounds good. I also spent 40 minutes to an hour at the DMV on Wednesday, so that was a treat. Especially in a major city DMV where line is like 40 people deep. Anyway, yeah, good. Glad to hear things are going good. I am also looking forward to this. Like, I won't be able to this weekend, but next weekend is, like, completely free, and I think Grace is, like, busy with stuff, so I will be able to play games and watch movies and just vegetate to my heart's content. Okay, so he hasn't been on the podcast in some time, but we're glad to welcome Alex Princeton back to the podcast, everybody.
Hey, Sam, how you doing?
Not bad, man. What's going on? How's your doggo? You got a dog since the last time you were on the pod.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the many things that's been keeping me busy. He's doing well. He wants to go on a walk, but he'll just have to wait a couple minutes.
What's your dog's name?
Rudy. He's a 5.5 month old black lab border collie mix.
Nice.
And you know who rescued who, right?
that's right. Well, that's good. That sounds like a smart combination of breed.
Yeah, he is clever and active. I had one other relevant note for the normal pod. I've been watching a few kids' movies because my niece was visiting. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I got to show her all those classics. So I recently watched Air Bud and nice. An American Tale, if either of you know those.
Yeah.
Alyssa's a big fan of American Tale.
Five Little Mouskowitz. Great.
But Alyssa isn't a fan of Air Bud. What are you trying to say, Gideon?
No, we want to get a golden retriever in the future, and she specifically told me, make sure it's Air Bud and not Marley and Me, is how she described it.
Oh, yeah.
So,
you know, Air Bud extended universe is absurd, but the original Air Bud is pretty fun.
I don't think I've seen either of those, but I'm familiar with them. I would totally watch him. I bet.
Well, you know, the original Air Bud plays basketball, but I think like he plays like cricket and water polo in the extended universe. I mean, not really.
Yeah. I mean, there's one called like Space Buddies, which is about like a bunch of golden retrievers in space. I mean, it's like Jason X. Like, it just goes totally bonkers. A lot of straight to DVD dog movies like that. And American Tail, I don't think I've ever seen the original American Tail, but I religiously rented Five Will Goes West from Blockbuster as a child. I was a
The
big fan of that.
original American Tail has just some like great movie bangers, like There Are No Cats in America, one of the greatest stories of all time.
Dang.
That's good. It sounds like Fiddler on the Roof or something for kids. Okay.
That's right.
And last but certainly not least, Paul McLees, welcome to the podcast, man.
It's good to be here.
And how's it been going? Anything new since the last time we talked?
I am in the tail end of the moving process. I'm hoping to have all of my stuff arranged in the house by the end of this weekend. I've not showered in 3 days, and I've been replaying Final Fantasy X.
Dude, living the dream. I was just about to ask you about Final Fantasy X. So, how far are you? You just beat Seymour for the first time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've ended the first Seymour battle. I kind of forgot how relatively difficult this Final Fantasy game is compared to most of the others. This is one of the only ones where I do feel like the difficulty between the player and the random encounters is actually quite, not quite even, but it's nearing there. Like you can't more than like one or two or three random encounters with the same troop without like curing yourself is probably a death sentence, which is
Yeah.
just, yeah.
Yeah, it can be pretty tough. Paul, that is maybe the first game I ever remember going to the website Game Facts, if any of you guys remember that. It was all like
I'm
text-based,
doing currently, but yeah.
HTML-based game walkthroughs and things. Game Facts was one of the rather Final Fantasy X was maybe the first game I ever had to look up on Game Facts to like figure out what was going on.
I need to finish what I started. That's why I picked the game up. Because when I was a kid, I stopped with Eve Ray, who from what I've read is like most people, that's where they quit the game.
Is that the
And
dragon you fight on top of the airship?
yes.
Yeah, okay. I know the boss you're talking
And
about. That one's a pain in the ass.
I needed to know, was that boss really that bad, or was I just like a stupid kid who didn't understand strategy?
It's probably
And
both.
yeah, a little bit of both probably. But I need to redeem myself, and I need to finish the game like I set out to do when I was 10.
That was maybe we'll get to the show, but that was maybe the first big boy game that I ever played, because I have this like feeling that like when you're really young and you're playing video games, it's like every video game is the greatest video game ever. You get like cars for PS2 for
Yeah.
Christmas from your grandma, and you're like psyched about it. You're like, this rocks, right? And then you realize that there are echelons. There are like games by people who actually want to be making those games, right? Like there's like Final Fantasy and Pokemon and like real games out there. And I remember going over to Levi Wright's house. Gideon, you remember Levi? And his older brothers had Final Fantasy X, and I just thought it was like the sickest shit I've ever seen in my life. Like it was just so much further ahead of anything I had been playing up to. Like I was playing Bug's Life on PS1, like a total scrub. Anyway, so we are taking a deviation from the normal course of this podcast, talking about nothing but movies and TV shows, and we kind of stumbled across this game, Pentiment. And stumbled across the idea that it has this kind of three-act structure and sort of digestible parts, and it's very choice-based, and I don't want to say non-linear, but it's very wide linear in terms of the different choices that can be made. And it seemed like something that might make for a good bonus podcast series where we do three individual episodes about Act 1, 2, and 3, and we kind of update each other about our progress along the way. So all of us have only played the first act, or at least only completed the first act of Pentiment. So we're going to be talking about that game today. It is a game by Obsidian Entertainment, probably most well known. Gideon, you can help me out on this. They are most well known for Fallout New Vegas, the South Park games,
I know they did Stick of Truth. I
Stick of
don't know
Truth,
if they did the
right?
sequel. I think they did. I'm not 100%. They did Outer Worlds.
Outer Worlds. They've got Avowed coming out. And I believe before they were Obsidian, they were Black Isles Entertainment, like the original Fallout team.
Yeah, that I'm murky on the details of like their origin and everything like that with Black Isle in relation to that. But they also did like Pillars of Eternity and Tyranny.
Well, they were also the CRPG, Baldur's Gate guys from Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 was Obsidian, but it was before they were called Obsidian, I believe. I think those were Black Isle games. Sorry,
what was that? Killers, Gideon? Pillars of Eternity? Have you played it?
No, I haven't, but isn't that in the same world that Avowed is in? Or going
correct. It's not like it's not officially D&D, but it's D&D-esque.
Yeah, it's like a spiritual successor to the original Baldur's Gate games.
Okay, right. Okay, that's good to know. I didn't know that.
Isometric, kind of like D&D-esque, yep.
Okay, yeah, I would definitely be down to try them just based on the other Obsidian games I've played, I've really enjoyed.
And so, Gideon, what other Obsidian games have you played, if any? Like New Vegas, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, mainly New Vegas.
That's made fucking Knights of the Old Republic. No, they made Knights of the Republic 2. KOTOR 2.
Mainly those two. I played KOTOR 2 back in the day, original Xbox. We rented it, beat it in like a week, me and my older brother. And that was really awesome. I still think it's probably one of the darkest, most bleak pieces of Star Wars media I've experienced. Really, like, it was a real bummer in mm-hmm. a crazy way. And New Vegas, I played it back in the day on 360 when that came out and got really into it, but I haven't really gone back to it since like my 360 days, let's say.
Yeah. So I looked up the history real quick, just as a quick aside. Obsidian was founded by four of the key members of Black Isle Entertainment. So they split off of Black Isle. Black Isle was the original creator of Fallout 2, Planescape Torment, and Icewind Dale. And like the original Baldur's Gate. So they did all of those old PC CRPGs. But anyway, go ahead.
I did also play Stick of Truth and beat that last year. Yeah. Loved it. That was excellent.
Great game.
And I've wanted to like jump into Outer Worlds. I played a little bit Grounded. That was actually surprisingly great. And I'm curious about Avowed and by proxy Pillars of Eternity. But yeah. I'm pretty new to CRPGs. So.
Yeah, me too. Princeton, what's your background with this studio? Have you played any of their... You just mentioned Pillars of Eternity, right?
I played Baldur's Gate 1 as well as Pillars 1 and 2. I have not beaten... those are long-ass games, and they feel that way to me, and I have not beaten any of them, but I put a good amount of time into all of them.
Okay.
I'm probably the biggest D&D nerd here. Obviously played New Vegas. That's probably it, though. I'm just reviewing here closely. I get the Outer Worlds confused with the Outer Wilds, which is
Yeah, everybody else does too. That game rips, though. Outer Wilds is excellent. That could be
one guy and totally unrelated.
That could be its own podcast. Anyway, Paul, what is your history with Obsidian? Have you played any of these other games?
Yeah, so I've played the South Park games, and then I also played KOTOR. And you know, what's to be said about that, that, you know, Gideon didn't already cover. I'm trying to look it up. I'm not sure. I played some of the early, Baldur's Gate games. And then also, I'm not sure if these were Obsidian, but, the like Icewind Dale, type games and stuff as well, which are kind of like adjacent to that whole universe. I don't know if they're by the same studio or not. That's what I'm trying to figure out, but.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, Icewind Dale is Black Isles, which is formerly Obsidian.
Okay. Nice.
But it's kind of like how Clover became Platinum Games. It's kind of like the same thing. Okay. So I think we all have a little bit of history with the studio. I'm familiar with all these games. I don't think, when I'm looking through the list, I don't think there's a single Obsidian game that I've actually completed aside from The Stick of Truth, which I think is great. But I'm like the least D&D interested person. So a lot of this other stuff is just kind of outside my normal wheelhouse. It's not that I would like never give it a try, but usually I get like 15 minutes in, and then I get sick of reading and I give up. And even like New Vegas is like the most internet memed game of all time in terms of like it having this like legendary status among like Western RPGs.
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or in Clomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or in Clomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or in Clomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
I always get to the strip in Vegas and then I give up. I'm like, I totally lose interest. So I don't know what my deal with New Vegas is, but I've never been able to get super into it. But anyway, so we're here to talk about their latest game, which is Pentiment. How would we introduce this game? It is a, I don't want to say a point and click adventure game, but it's basically a point and click adventure game set in medieval Bavaria,
like 15th century, 1500s.
Yeah, like 1500s, right around the time that like the Reformation is going to start happening, where all of a sudden like Martin Luther kind of starts become, his ideas become more popular, and he starts to challenge things about the church. There are still a lot of people living in this time that remember the old pagan ways of these lands, and we kind of follow our protagonist Andreas. Who is an artist who has been who's like kind of doing his journeyman work at an abbey. He's helping out with like the lettering of books in like the old style pre-printing press, and he is also working on his own masterpiece in the meantime before he like returns to his homeland and gets married and gets back to his life. This game, it's kind of structured into three acts. I believe, if I've read about it correctly, all three of the acts take place in the town of Tassing. And it's just over, you know, there's like 10 years between the first and the second act, and then another period of time goes by. So where do we want to start on this game?
Can we start the surface level, like point and clickiness of it all? Does anyone, like, what's everyone's history with point and click? And I mean, those games have obviously fallen out of favor in the mainstream. So why does Pentiment work? Because we'll probably spend a lot of time discussing the story, but I think
it depends on what you mean by work, because like, I think point and click games are not very popular. And I would also say that Pentiment is not very popular in terms of sales and money. I don't think this game did very well at all. We don't know the player counts on it, but I would be shocked if this game did it. I mean, it's hard to say if it made its money back, right? But because it was probably a team of 20 people at Obsidian, while 200 people work on The Outer Worlds and Avowed and these bigger games. But I think it works perfectly well for the game that they've presented.
Yeah, that's interesting. I read here 2.8 million gross revenue, 200k units sold. I guess that's not big numbers by a lot.
200k is like nothing, but it's also notable that this is on subscription services such as Game Pass. So you could conceivably pay for a month of Game Pass and play through it in a weekend.
And I guess I'm looking at Steam, and it is multi-platform. I just think like a lot of these games, you know, are not typically very engaging because all you're doing is pointing and clicking, you know, there's no controls to speak of. I think the point I was going to make is that the art style is so detailed and the animations are so kind of precise and living. There's something about the way like the text is written and you hear him etching along. It's like, I just think it's a beautiful, beautiful game, and that helps like you forget that all you're doing is really pointing and clicking on the screen.
I'd like to add on to that, because this game, it's like when you talk about it or maybe show someone a trailer, it seems like it's going to be the most boring game ever and just put you to sleep. And I feel like that's why people are almost like afraid to try it. But when you play it and give it, you know, 15, 20 minutes, whatever, it is like you're falling into a really good book, but it's a playable, beautiful visual novel. Like, it's like the final form of like the best choose your own adventure book I've ever seen. But it's not a book, it's even better, it's a game. And it's so incredibly like vibey and brings you into that space. And
you know,
it's incredible.
There are really great story moments that we will get to, but I thought the first, let's say, 20 to 30 minutes of this game, and of course they're going to be slow because they're introducing characters and they're just getting into the game or whatever. When this game really clicked for me and I thought this is going to be really special is the first time you walk into the big church and there's that guy singing the Gregorian chant in the church.
Oh man,
I was like, oh my god, dude, this is going to be awesome.
Like, yeah,
you're running back and forth and like the audio pans as you're like running past him, and it's this like gorgeous, just like the single voice. It is really incredible stuff. And another small detail I love is when the writing is being etched out, sometimes they misspell a word and then it erases it.
Oh
and
man,
rewrites it. Oh, it's like, those are some very small but nice details.
And it's such a smart thing. I feel like it does those little almost like tricks to help keep you engaged with the dialogue and want to hear more. Just the scratching of the pen is like addictive. It's weird.
It almost reminds me of old N64 era games where they didn't have the disk space for the voices. So like Banjo-Kazooie, everybody talks like, it was kind of like giving voice to unvoiced characters. And I think another thing that adds to that is that based on who you're talking to, the script that is written in like the font is incredibly different. So Andreas kind of has a artistic but common kind of script, but then when you talk to like the bishop who comes in from the other town to like judge what's going on, it's like this incredibly ornate you know, typography that kind of comes in. So smaller details like that are make you feel that a lot of care was put into this game. And what an incredible idea, right? For a small team to be like, we want to do this game about the Reformation, and it's all talking and choices, and it's just this like, you know, what becomes a murder mystery point and click adventure game. To the point of point and click adventure games, the only other developer whose games I have played that are point and click that I really love are Double Fine. So these are the guys that would have made Grim Fandango, or they made like the Secret of Monkey Island games back in the day, like Broken Age. Tim Schafer like is just like one of the masters of writing in this medium. And just a shout out to him being just really like if you don't have a good writer and a good like story team, this kind of game just completely falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, any comments on like
the last details? Point and click game I played?
It's been a while.
About that.
Probably Broken Age for me. Or
same. I played like half of that. I haven't finished it, but yeah.
Does Night in the Woods count?
I would say I haven't played it, but that seems like it would fall into that.
Yeah, I played it. That game was fucking boring.
What'd you say?
Would you count like Myst as a point and click game?
Oh, 100%.
That up in the last.
Yeah, that's. I would say that's a little different, but
more than story.
Yeah.
I think the last point and click I played might have been Pajama Sam.
I don't think I know that one.
It's like one of those humongous entertainment point and click.
Yeah. Freddy Fish.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. He was like of that trio, Freddy Fish and Putt-Putt.
Putt-Putt.
I never got Putt-Putt. Yeah.
Freddy Fish was the shit.
Yeah. Yes. Putt-Putt and Freddy Fish I played, and that was fucking incredible, dude. Is Pajama Sam in that same league?
Yes. Yeah, he's part of the Humongous Entertainment point and click universe.
Sam, I did want to touch on one thing he said about like the subject matter. Probably one of the most unique and unusual choices for like a main character and like setting. If you get a middle-aged game, you're always following like a knight or something in battle, and we pick like an artist and not like a, I don't know, it's just such an interesting choice, and you wonder how they landed on it.
Right. It's not like he's an artist that, you know, it's not like he has this crazy mechanic where everything he draws comes to life and he fights off evil bad guys with his powers. He's just some dude, right, that is like all this shit is happening to.
He's some dude, and he's some dude at an era that like we don't talk a lot about and that I've almost never seen represented in games.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, I was sort of unfamiliar with, like, we'll get into talking about the town of Tassin, but when he was like going to, when you'd go to bed every night, like, I thought one of the more interesting mechanics of the game was like, oh, you have to go eat, go find a family to eat with. And I'm like, they're just, you just run around town in this day and age and you find a family you're going to eat, you're just going to steal food from. I know that everybody in the game is just like, I'm ignorant to the historical context. Like, that must be what happened with like journeyman artists.
Another thing specifically, I'm glad you brought that up, because one thing that I noticed when playing the game was that you can actually, and I think this is on purpose, you can tell a lot about the people you're conversing with based off of what exactly they're eating. And I think that's why there's, it seems pointless that you kind of pick and choose the order with which you eat your food. But I think the point of that is they want you to kind of notice exactly what you're eating and how that plays into the social status or the standing of the person that you're with, because it provides unspoken context to what's going on and might influence the choices that you make.
Well said.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I didn't think of that before, but looking backward, I can definitely see how
100%, yeah,
like picking the almonds and then the cheese and the
I want cheese so bad playing this game.
Dude, yeah.
Maybe this could be our first point of comparison, but I'm curious where everybody ate before we get into the deeper story elements. Do you guys remember? I can get
I kind of had to go around, because you can only eat with each family so many times, I feel like, before they make you start kind of like exploring. But I ate with the people who were like more familiar to me, like the family that you're staying with, Otto and Old Otto. I ate with them one time because I needed Otto to do something, so I buttered him up. I ate at the bakery one time because I figured like the pretzels were going to be lit. just that, you know, that I didn't eat like with. Oh, and I had a meal out in the woods with the guy who runs the burning pit, like the charcoal pit.
I ate at some of those places. I also ate in the woods, and I ate with the Baron's wife.
The Baron's
wife. I ate with the Baron's wife, the family stayed with, and that other traveler with the orange.
Yeah, the traveling monk. I ate with him once.
Yeah, he was cool.
Who's the... Okay, can somebody remind me who the Baron is?
Isn't that Lorenz, right?
Yeah, Lorenz. Lorenz's wife.
Oh, I didn't even know she was in town. I never even met her.
At the end of the act, after spoilers. We're going to do some spoilers. The Baron is murdered, you can eat dinner with his wife.
See, I didn't even know she was in the game. I totally missed out.
Gosh, I had several interactions with her throughout the
act. She's like in the guest house, I think, right outside the Abbey.
So let's back up. Let's just provide the context. So the actual story of this game really is that while you are working as a journeyman artist at this place, this guy, like a very powerful lord, comes to town and is like a dick to everybody. And then, you know, like a day passes, he pisses a couple people off, and then off screen he gets murdered. And then one of your fellow artists gets caught red-handed. That's the phrase they use in the game. But he's like the first person to discover the body. And so when everybody else rushes in, they're like, oh shit, Brother Piero, who is a total G, by the way,
super G,
killed Lorenz with this knife. And so the first act of the gameplay is basically them saying, you have 3 in-game days to uncover enough evidence about the other town people who you might suspect.
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy and Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy and Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy and Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
So that you can get Piero off the hook for this murder that you're pretty sure he did not commit.
Yeah, I mean, he's like obvious. Evil and shit. He's a man with like no ill will. He's incredibly frail, and yeah,
right. So let's start from the end. Who did everybody get killed at the very end of Act One? Like, who did you end up putting to the sword?
Prior Farrick.
I did the exact same thing.
I tried to. I like was able to win the favor of that like judge, but I didn't have enough evidence to make it be Prior Fenric. So it like backfired, and the old lady, the widow. She got fucking axed, bro.
Damn.
After I helped clean her house or whatever the whole afternoon.
I had Lucky put to death.
That's just like killing Neil, basically.
Okay, so Paul, why did you feel Lucky needed to die?
Because I don't like him. It doesn't go any deeper than that.
He was kind of the grumpy blacksmith, right?
Yeah.
He was grumpy. He got into a fight with a guy. He just kind of pissed me off. Okay. And one thing, so I tried to take kind of, I assume you guys, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong. I assume you all are probably going to play the game trying to do what you feel is best or what you would do in a situation. I'm trying to build Andreas up as a character. My idea for him is that I want him to like become a leader. And with that, the whole trajectory that I put him through was just based off of like loyalty to his friend. So my whole like philosophy was, I don't actually care whether or not Lucky did it. It just needs to happen that my friend doesn't get out.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess so. But a lot of this will go into some of the background options that I chose for Andreas and kind of what I'm trying to build with him into the future of the game. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes for me. But
are we all on the same page that we think that obviously none of the people we actually picked did the crime?
I don't know. I feel like I wasn't able to get enough evidence on any one person. I thought maybe that nun could have done it because it felt like she had some motive based on the Baron. Basically, sounds like he sexually assaulted her.
Right.
So I don't. That was kind of my main guess, but I couldn't find out enough.
It's kind of like an episode of CSI, right, where they catch the guy in the first 10 minutes. You're like, this isn't the guy, right? It's like, we got two more acts of this game left to go. Like, I know that none of the options that they've given me so far, I'm not saying that we haven't met the killer and the killer isn't in the village. I'm just saying that like between Sister Matilda, Otilla, Ferenc, and Lucky, who I think are there might be more options, but I think those are the four options. I don't want to look it up because I don't want to accidentally spoil something. I don't think any of those people did it. Like, Ferenc, to me, like, is, like, deep into black magic and some occult shit, and he's, like, acting like a weirdo and is also a dick, so I didn't have any problem, like, putting him down, but I don't think he did it. I wonder if there is a way to uncover enough evidence to be, like, Bishop, I don't think any of these people did it, and but it definitely wasn't Pyrrho. You know, I wonder, it'll be interesting for our Act 3 podcast to go back, to look at the, you know, like...
Do you know if there is an answer?
Grace has finished the game and says that by the end of Act 3, you know what happened. But it will not give me any more detail than that.
So, reading I have done, if you've read anything about, like, post-Act 1, it suggests to me that the game is basically designed such that you cannot uncover enough evidence to, like, come to a conclusion in a single playthrough because they limit your time. And that there are people, the consensus is there's not, like, 100% conclusive evidence for any one of the people.
Mm-hmm.
I heard some folks say, who have played multiple times, say that, like, Lucky of the four is probably the closest to conclusive. But
huh, so I was right, huh? You guys were wrong.
I'm with
so
you.
I guess me and my unorthodox approach, perhaps.
Mine was more of a whoopsie daisy then. I accidentally condemned the old woman to death. And it was, I forget who talked to me before it, but they were like, hey, maybe don't tell the guy everything if you're like one of them is your friends. And I just like told him everything I knew.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
Did they kill Otilla with, like, was it the executioner with the sword?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it was so awesome. Like, I don't mean to be like weird. That scene was fucking awesome. Also, small shout out before I forget about it. The scene where you originally find Lorenz dead, the painting in the background of that scene with all the skeletons dancing around and shit is awesome.
Dance with Death. Isn't that?
Yes. Yeah,
I looked that up to see if it was real because I thought the same thing. I was like, is that actually?
Is it real?
It is. Yeah.
Fucking hell yeah.
Awesome. I have a question for you guys. Yes, I put Mucky to death, and I think most people wouldn't agree with that approach. I'm curious, you guys who put Ferenc to death, how did the town react? I'm curious if it's kind of universal where no matter what happens, you feel uncertain about it. It sounds like that's the case. I put Lucky to death, and basically the way it stands for me right now is the whole town kind of hates me.
My experience is that the town is indifferent and the church hates me. So, you know, having played like a minute of Act 2, they will not let me in the church.
So, okay, so this is important because this, the logic that I used, part of the logic that I used in making this decision is, again, I want to become a leader. The church has more governing authority than any other aspect of this town. And so gaining favor of the church to me was a strategic decision to propel me into power, which I don't know if that's actually going to happen or if that can happen, but I want to have the most influence that I can. So that was also part of the reason that I did not accuse any member of the church.
Crimson, how far down the black magic Ferenc hole did you go?
All the way. So I took Latinist and Logician, and I did that like puzzle. I deciphered the thing. You know, they put that clue in front of you really early, and I was like, oh, this has to be like the lead you need to follow because it's probably the most obvious and promising one. So like a sucker, I just followed it as far as I could. And
it's crazy. So you dug up the grave in the cemetery and everything?
Yeah, I dug up the grave and I got caught doing it.
I did not.
Me either. Whoa.
Damn.
I got caught because I couldn't convince the one monk to help me. So I just had one of the peasants come up and dig it up with me, which actually has like big implications for, at least it seems like it may have big implications for Act 2 from the bit I played.
I can't be the only person who caught the gay boys in the library. I feel like everybody gets that one because everybody investigates the secret passage into the library from the
group. Was fun. I loved that. Yeah. All the nooks and crannies that added a whole other layer.
it's like very cool. So I bet a lot of people do go like, oh, we got to find the secret passage to the library.
Yeah. Well, and they lay it on like Sister Illuminata, who, by the way, is a complete baddie.
100%
really lays it on with the like, well, don't go in the secret passage. And I'm like, well, I'm going. I'm going. Did any of you get the bit where the one nun really pushes herself on you?
Yep.
And Paul, yes, did you engage?
I did. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't. I specifically felt like the game was pushing it so hard on me. I was like,
I think
What am I gonna get? Like, what path are they going to push me down as a reward for not engaging with the one opportunity Andres has to get laid?
I wasn't a dick to her, but I don't think that I flirted with her really in any capacity. No, okay, I'm remembering now. I basically told her to keep reading smut because she was into, you know.
Do you know the character's name?
The nun's name?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Okay. I don't think I interacted with her too much with like the flirting stuff.
I got the library scene and I turned her down only because I wanted to impress and appease Sister Illuminata.
Yeah. I love the scene where Sister Illuminata is telling you like what books are banned from the library, and she's like posing in the illustrations of the books as she's like explaining what the story is, and it has Andrea in certain poses. I also really like the dream sequences where Andreas is talking to like Socrates and Saint Corobrian and other things, or he's on the Ship of Fools and things like that. I feel like this would be a great time to have Neil, because he could tell me who the people in the dream sequence are, because I'm not smart enough to know. I can pretend. I'm like, yeah, St. Grobian, that guy. Jeez. Do you guys have a suspect of like who the real killer is at all? Or
Lucky.
Or like, okay, Paul, but there's two more acts of the game, so clearly it's not going to be Lucky, right?
I think it, you know, I wouldn't rule out that it could have been one of our four, but they were put up to it. And there's more going on.
Well, you guys
wouldn't surprise me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you guys got the letters with the purple font on them, right? Like with the very ornate purple
font.
Like, clearly the person sending those letters is like the mastermind behind like whatever's going on, right? I mean, or maybe that's what they want us to believe.
Yeah.
I'm surprised none of us accused that little shit kid, Martin Bauer.
Oh, what an asshole.
I was really trying to be, like, there for him so he could, like, stop being a little shit, and he was just such a fucker. He was just so obnoxious.
Did anybody else get tripped up on the having to spend your time? I feel like they didn't explain that well enough.
Oh, yeah. And,
like, I figured it out by like the end of the first day, mm-hmm. but like I didn't understand until I had already accidentally wasted time. Like the first time I played through it, I didn't do the autopsy on the body.
Oh, okay.
I totally missed it because I thought I had time and I went back and he was already done with it. My bad.
I made sure to do that. I did that.
Okay.
Yeah, I also was tripped up for sure.
I mean, didn't you do something else interesting in that time, Sam?
I don't remember what I did the first time. I think I went to like the knitting circle with a bunch of the wives because they know like all the hot goss in town. And all I learned from the knitting circle was that, yeah, one of the sisters got assaulted by the Baron many, many years ago. But I don't think that Sister Matilda did it. Like, you know, she has motive, but I don't think she fucking clobbered Lorenz, you know, with the shovel or whatever. You do find a bloody shovel in Matilda's like possession later, but she claims that it's for
like, killing a rabbit or something.
Killing rabbits or something, you know. So. Mm-hmm. It's too bad there isn't any like they can't just scan the blood and be like, yeah, it's rabbit's blood. Not there's no CSI.
Who kills rabbits with a shovel?
They had some weird explanation, like some medieval explanation.
Because like their garden, they gotta like watch after it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Other threads to pull at. I know Alex, you gotta walk your dog soon. So
I'll other yeah.
ever any other threads we want to pull at with kind of act one? Favorite characters so far?
I gotta think about it.
Yeah, there's so many.
Their names are hard to remember.
So go ahead, Alex.
Oh, just the monk who got framed.
Piero. Oh, yeah, Piero. He's goated. He's awesome.
And I gotta say, it was a little disappointing to me that, like, kind of, no matter what happens, he just dies anyway. Like, even if you save him, then it's like as soon as Act Two starts, he dies in the transposition.
Well, so yeah, I mean, he was already like 90, so I mean, he's like super old.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It makes it feel.
So this isn't so much like a favorite character because we don't really know a lot about this character, but one of the people we keep running into is Till, who is a shepherd. He's always got like sheep with him. You usually run into him in the meadow between the abbey and between town. And one of the like most interesting conversations I ever had with anybody in this game was talking to him about the old Roman architecture that's around here. And all the people in the church tell you is that, like, oh, Tassing was founded by this saint, blah, 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 blah. Here's the story of the saint. And then what Till tells you is, like, that's actually a story that they completely ripped off. It was, like, an old pagan story that they basically, like, put a saint on top of and they turned it into, like, a Catholic story. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is going to be, like, one of the larger themes of this game is how, like, this is literally this Catholic monastery built on top of Roman ruins and, like, as the ages go by, like the names that we refer to these gods by changes, but like people are still the same, right? Like I think that's like one of the most interesting things about this game so far is like it hitting on that theme of like the names and the details change of these stories. But it can be paganism, it can be Catholicism, it can be whatever. And something will eventually come to replace that, and it's all part of the same continuum. I thought that was like a really interesting insight that this game kind of made me kind of come to. Or any character that has like all the, when they talk about the old pagan stuff, I just thought all those characters were really interesting. Sorry, Prince, go ahead.
Yeah, I like the characters that you go see in the woods.
Yeah, they're cool. I think I'm kind of shocked as we go along by the amount of like things you guys did that I never did or experienced, you know? Didn't even like, you totally missed because of the way they limit your time.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? So, of all the things that we've talked about, did anybody do anything kind of off the beaten path? Like, we all did the library investigation. It sounds like a few of us did the like chase Ferring down the occult puzzles. It feels like Paul, you went after Lucky. Get in. You cleaned out Attila's house.
Yeah.
I talked to the girls in the knitting circle. Did anybody else do anything?
I also talked to the knitting circle.
Me as well.
I tailed Lucky. Let's see, what else? I didn't do the sheep. Did anyone help with the sheep?
I tried to, and I think they like shushed me off and were like, we'll handle it. Is that early on or?
Yeah, very early.
It's like one of the first things you do.
Okay, yeah, because I think I tried to and they were basically like, no, is it Martin, that annoying little shit? They're like, he needs to do it. We told him to do it.
I wonder if can you blame Martin for the murder? Can you frame Martin?
Yes, you can.
Okay, nice.
Okay, that's interesting. My only theory, like two of the threads that the game presented that they did not touch upon again by the end of Act One that I think are going to come up in Act Two or Three, is the nun that is shut inside of the walls of the church where she's like, yep. Did any of you get that?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Gideon, there is a nun that is like incommunicado. Like she prays alone in a room. Okay. She has like visions and stuff. Like she's
okay.
Like,
yeah.
There's something wrong with her spine. Like she's. But they're interpreting it in medieval times as like her having holy visions or whatever. I think that's going to have something to do with it. And I think seeing the ghost in the Roman architecture,
mm-hmm.
in the meadow early on. I think that's going to have something to do with it. And obviously the notes that you're getting that are written in the purple script are coming from somebody, but Grace would not tell me if it was somebody that was in Act One. Like, she wouldn't tell me if it was one of the existing characters. So I'm really excited to see what.
Did anybody go to church?
No.
Classic. I don't remember that being an option.
Yeah, I think you can show up at the church one of the days. You tell the father early on that you're going to go, or you don't, I guess. You tell him you're not going to go.
I think maybe I didn't, because was that like the day, or was that like the first day when you could have dinner with the family you're staying with?
I think you'd have to go during the murder investigation, but I don't know.
Okay.
That would make sense, I think, gameplay-wise, to stick that during the murder. I wonder what you get from that. Like, what, I mean, obviously, there's the benefits of Andreas going to church. I mean, like, in terms of gameplay, like, what does the player get from, you know, I don't want to say wasting the time, but, like, spending the time at the church?
I have no idea. Yeah, no, that was just, like, one thing I thought I obviously passed up. I'm trying to think if I did anything else extra. Nothing that you didn't do, Sam. It sounds like we played a pretty similar game.
Yeah. What background did you guys pick? I was hedonist. I was into the occult, and I had a background in medicine.
I
picked two study areas. So medicine and what?
It was medicine and the occult, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe it was oration.
Yeah, I had similar. So mine, I'm looking at it now. I had craftsman, medicine, occultist, and orator. And then it says mystical spirit, but that might be an Act Two thing.
I have craftsman, medicine, Latinist, and magician.
I have a bookworm, imperial law, orator, occultist, and mystical spirit.
Nice.
Dude, I'm so excited to get done with this and immediately go out to the other room and start playing Act Two.
Oh, you're totally like hit the nail on the head that I basically like picked a character. I'm not going to say that's just like me, but like is the person I think of myself as or that I want to be.
Oh, and yeah, I think that's
really made decisions in the game that are like, what do I think is right, or you know, what would I do? So
yeah, that's the presumed way I assume you're supposed to play these games is like that.
Your way is probably more interesting.
Well, yeah, I'm trying not to play as myself. I'm trying to basically see how complex this game will let you be as a character.
See, I always get too in my head about story-based decision games like this, where, like, for instance, very early on, they show Father Ferenc running into the church, writing the occult shit down in that journal, and then running off. My brain immediately says, like, that is the path that they really want me to take. And if I was the game designer, I would make that the least useful path. And I would hide, like, the very useful, like, interesting path in another obscure area. You know what I mean? So I start to think about it more in terms of that. But again, I don't think at this point in the game any of our choices have truly mattered that much.
Probably,
you know, I don't think that by the end of Act One you would have been able to do anything that would like really screw up the narrative that they're attempting to weave, you know. So I think that, unless anybody has anything else they want to bring up, I think that kind of does it for Act One.
A small thing while we're kind of talking about how we built our character. We could talk about like where they studied or where they're from. I did Italy and Nuremberg.
I did Italy and I think Venice or something. I just stayed in Italy or maybe or London or something. Maybe.
I don't remember the options. I think I did Italy.
I don't really remember the options either. I think you could do Germany for one of them.
Okay.
I don't remember.
You know, the Germans always make good stuff.
Did any of you have dinner with the guy who obviously like abuses his family and children?
Was that the windmill guy?
Might have been Lucky's family. I don't remember exactly.
I don't think so.
Um, No, I had it with the redheaded family a lot.
Hey, Alex, are you talking about the guy who tries to discourage his son from being an artist?
Sounds possible.
That sounds like the windmill guy.
Being a writer. His son wants to be a writer, maybe.
Fucking too real, guys. Too real.
Well, because it's funny, because then what you can do is if you walk down past their windmill, there's like a little brick wall or something that their son just makes drawings on. And you can look at them and be like, this looks like shit, kid. You got to stop writing. You can like be an asshole.
Oh, my God. I pulled like a Stand By Me moment. I was like, don't listen to your dad. You're a good artist and you're going to be a great artist someday, kid.
That kid, Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, he somehow survived for like 500 years.
500 years of pure spite.
Pure hatred, yeah.
Andreas, I see here you studied in Jerusalem. Interesting.
Oh my God.
Okay, anyway. Okay. Well, it's been a joy, guys. We will talk in a couple weeks to talk about Act Two, not this following Wednesday, but the Wednesday after that. Next Wednesday, if anybody wants to join us for Bone Tomahawk, we'd love to have you.
Hell yeah.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to playing Act Two now. This conversation's got me pumped.
Yeah, I'm gonna go take a piss and get a Dr. Pepper and light up this Act Two business, dude. Yeah. I can't. I'm so hyped up about fucking literature right now, guys. It's crazy. I can't wait to go read for 3 hours. It's so sick.
Look at Byzantine artwork. It's gonna be fun.
Oh, the scratching of the pen. Oh,
yeah, dude. Like that was like me and Grace's meme when we're playing this game and we're on the couch. It's like every time I walk past the guy that's like doing the Gregorian chants, like kind of like sit down to control and be like. I was just busting it down sexual style to this fucking Gregorian chant.
This game like makes you appreciate life. You're like, oh, look at that butterfly, it's so beautiful. Oh, the music. Oh, the wind.
Yeah, because you're doing something, you're not just reading ancient text anymore. Okay. All right, guys, well, I will see you hopefully all in 2 weeks. Can't wait to see what happens.
Hell yeah.
See you guys.
See you guys.